admonition. The notions and sentiments declared by the gadabouts in this audio program are not endorsed by the Japanese Animation Information Network. I do hope the show meets your fancy.
Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. Justin's here.
Howdy.
And joining us this week, it's been on the show a couple of times before, returning champion for sure, but it's been a long time. He is the author of, is it steampunk, Tim?
Oh, mate. No, it's not steampunk, man. No. Ow! That's the burn! Oh!
Author of the cyberpunk novel, Paintwork, which you can find on Amazon, and you're writing about anime for Tor.com, right?
Yeah, I am, yeah, and a few other little places as well.
But it's Tim Mon. Tim, thanks for coming on.
Hey, nice one, man. It's good to be back.
Yeah, this is a Twitter show, so we got a ton of Twitter questions to get to. But first, I figure we should go around and see what people have been watching. Justin, you checking out anything lately?
Yeah, full disclosure, I actually made the Blu-rays of this, but I didn't like it before, and I went back, and I actually like it now. I actually, in the space of 4 days, marathoned all of Kimi ni Todoke.
Oh, really? Okay. I couldn't get into that.
I couldn't either. At first, I was just like, why is this guy into this wallflower girl? It makes no sense. She's just kind of, you know, lame and doesn't really do anything other than get flustered. But I came back to it just kind of craving some, you know, melodramatic shoujo angst, and boy, I got it. This ended up being exactly the self that I wanted.
Wow. Okay. You sort of explained what it's about, but maybe get into that a little bit.
It is basically, it's your typical high school, girl is a complete social outcast and guy likes her, and she slowly warms up and figures out how to be social. And you know, the problem was, when I first started watching it, I was trying to approach it from the guy's point of view. And that doesn't work.
No,
you have to approach the show from the girl's point of view.
Right.
because it's not obvious initially why this guy likes this girl. And there is no obvious reason initially why he should. And that, if you're trying to approach it from that, it's just frustrating. But if you just kind of take it at face value and you go in from, you know, Sawako, the girl's name is Sawako and everyone calls her Sadako from The Ring because she just looks that creepy.
It's that one. Okay. Yeah. Try and watch that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But if you just go in there, just kind of being open to the fact that she just has zero self-esteem and can barely function in a social environment, then you'll have a good time. And it ended up being kind of crack.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, I watched the first episode, and the lead character basically spends the entire, 23 minutes or whatever explaining her character. Like, the inner monologue is extremely like, I'm like this. Boy, I sure am like this. Gosh, I don't have any self-esteem for 23 minutes, and then talking about how wonderful the guy is. And I was like, wow, this is kind of irritating. And didn't wind up watching past that. But how many episodes would you say it takes for it to really get going?
Not that many, maybe just two or three, because okay. Once she starts making friends, you spend less time in her head.
Okay.
And that's really where the show shines. Not that there's not a lot of internal monologue. It's a kind of leisurely paced romance show. That's kind of, you know, that's part and parcel.
Yeah, I don't necessarily mind internal monologue. I just don't want the internal monologue to literally just be the character explaining who they are. Over and over again. Like, it's got to move the story along.
You only have to do that once. And once it starts, you know, really exploring other characters, you never hear their internal monologue. So there is less of that.
Yeah.
It's actually very rewarding. A very rewarding show. And I was actually, thank God, working on the final volume so I could just watch that.
Oh, yeah.
So, one of the perks of making Blu-rays.
Cool. Cool. Anything else, or is that it?
That's it. I haven't really been watching all that much of anything this week.
A little busy.
Yeah, I'm working on this new series because the last one where I kind of explained how the whole money thing works in the anime business, it went over pretty well, so we decided to do another one. Mm-hmm. This time, I am doing another three-parter about how licensing works.
Right.
Obviously with an eye towards anime, but it actually it works the same thing for pretty much any other kind of TV or movies. It'll be a three-parter. I'm almost done writing part two, and we should have that up, first week in June?
First or second week in June, yeah. It'll be before convention season, for sure.
Yeah. So, that's been fun to write, and, you get to come up with a case study, but there's so much stuff to explain and so much legalese to decode into, like, human speak.
Right. Cool.
I look forward to that, man, because I'm currently just in, totally stealing your anime industry articles for something I'm writing. I'll just come out and tell you I'm doing it.
Okay, I will ready the lawsuit.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Or at least cut him some royalties, yeah. before convention season, probably first or second week in June, I have read the first article, the first bit of it, and it's good stuff. So, yeah, look forward to that. Tim, what have you been watching anime at all?
Yes, I have.
Wow,
I'm on a bit of a catch-up thing at the moment because I was busy this year and I missed out on a load of stuff. So I'm catching up with a few things this season. What am I watching? Space Brothers is quite good. Mm-hmm. I quite like that because it's about old blokes having sort of life crisis. Mm-hmm. So I can kind of identify with that. It's kind of nice to have some anime that I can identify with. And the jazz thing, Kids on the Slope, which isn't really a jazz thing, but it's got jazz in it, as everyone keeps telling me.
Right.
But it's the sort of jazz I like, so I'm kind of interested in that. And it's Watanabe, so, you know. And the cat thing with the round cat, Poyo Poyo, which is great. I love that because it's got a cat in it.
And it's round.
And it's round.
Yeah. I'm behind on Kids on the Slope. I need to catch up. But I'm happy with how quickly that story is moving along. They are not wasting a lot of time.
Yeah, I've only watched first three. And yeah, it does seem to be getting on quite nicely. They're not slacking on it, which is good. I just hope there is a lot more jazz in it. That's my only concern. I'm really concerned that they can't license all this Blue Note stuff, man, that they clearly want to put in it, and they're just going to be going over the same songs over and over again, which doesn't bother me. But it'd be nice to see a bit of variety in there.
How many episodes are out now?
It's like seven, is it?
No,
I don't know.
We're not that. No, we're not 7 weeks into the season, are we?
Maybe it's five then. I don't know.
Maybe five. I think maybe five. I don't know.
Good. I can still catch up.
Yeah. Again, I'm behind, so I wouldn't know. But yeah, the one thing I like about it is that it's not going to be about will they confess their feelings. Like that's not what the show is. And I am getting to the point where if that's what the show is about, I just can't. I can't handle it.
I just totally can't watch those things anymore.
Yeah.
I just have
yeah. Neither of you guys should watch Kimi no Totoke.
Okay.
No, I tried and I didn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for that shit.
Yeah. if you're going to take 23 episodes to say, I like you, and then that's supposed to be some giant payoff, nope. can't do it. Can't do it. But yeah, Kids on the Slope, totally, totally awesome show. I do this with everything, but and I kind of didn't want to do it with Kids on the Slope, but I might wind up waiting for the Blu-ray because they already announced it's coming out. So may as well, you know? I don't know. Plus, it's a
have they announced a date for that yet?
No. It'll probably be out in the fall or something like that. But, that's such a beautiful show. Why not wait for the high definition?
Yeah.
The streaming looks good and everything, but it's just not quite there yet.
I don't know. Maybe it's just the streaming or something. It is good looking. I didn't think it was beautiful, but everything I've watched this season, nothing has stuck out as being beautiful to me. And I just wonder if that's just the industry and the money and et cetera at the moment.
Well, the character animation is amazing, though.
Oh, I mean, the guy. People were moaning on Twitter to me that was just rotoscoping, which I don't mind if it is, to be honest.
So what?
In the first episode, when that guy just rips into that drum riff, I was in heaven, man. It was beautiful to watch and to listen.
Even if it is just rotoscoped, like, there's an art to rotoscoping and making it look really good. And
totally.
You know, even if it is just rotoscoped, it still looks phenomenal. Like,
Totally. I'm not disagreeing with that.
Yeah.
I yeah, I mean, it's the same argument you can have about motion capture and CGI, isn't it? I guess. But I totally agree. I just felt it was a bit. I don't know. Just a little flat looking in places.
Yeah, well, it is this sort of. It is the mid '60s in Japan were not a particularly colorful era.
No, I guess.
You know, you can contrast the look of something set in that time period in Japan versus something set in America, and it's going to be a very different looking show in the mid to late 60s.
Don't get me wrong. Like, an anime rendering of a Blue Note record spinning on a turntable is my kind of fan service. Do you know what I mean? You know?
Right. That's cool. So I am totally consumed with... our upcoming Revenge of the 90s show. The mountain of shit that I have to watch that I've set up for myself is... I'm staring up at it at this point. I have not yet really begun to dig in. But just to give you guys an idea of how much shit I have given myself to watch, I'm just going to run down a list of the stuff that I've set myself up to rewatch. And most of this stuff is a rewatch. Some of it's stuff I've never seen. But I don't want to do the list without having revisited all of it because I really don't want it to be about nostalgia. I want it to be about how I feel about this stuff now. Unfortunately, that the list I've got is something like 40 shows, and this is TV. And
holy
back in
shit!
Back in the 90s,
so what are you doing? Just watching one episode? Or?
No. I'm going through it. The intention is to
you're
go
a crazy
through
man.
All this stuff. The intention is to get through all of it. I don't think I'm going to succeed at that, but I want to get through as much of it as I can so that my opinion on it is totally fresh. It's for right now. It's not what I remember the show being. It's what the show actually is now.
Well, as the goal is to build a top 10 list, I imagine most of them you'll be able to dismiss after an episode or less.
I think so. But the problem is a lot of this stuff is stuff that I used to really, really like, and I don't remember how the show wound up in the middle or how it ended. So I'm really kind of in an impasse. Like if I only watch like the first couple episodes of, you know, Nadesco and go, yeah, it's pretty good, but I don't really remember how that show wraps up. So I kind of need to go through it. Now I'm probably going to watch this stuff at twice speed, double speed or whatever, get through it real quick. That's a legit way to watch stuff, man. If you're paying attention, you're not going to miss anything.
Not Nadesco
anyway, but. Yeah, it's a ridiculous amount of stuff. I mean, I'm this week I'm trying to tackle Giant Robo, Video Girl Eye, Magic Knight Rayearth, Marmalade Boy, Nadesco, Gundam 08 The Mess Team, Kenshin, Outlaw Star, Cowboy Bebop, Karikano, Serial Experiments Lane, and Ninja Scroll.
Ladies and gentlemen, we may have to preempt Endcast while Zach recovers from a suicide attempt.
If now, you're watching Bebop at double speed, we're no longer friends, man.
I'm a little concerned about Cowboy Bebop. I don't know where.
What?
I don't know where it's going to wind up on the list. I have the more I think about my memories of Cowboy Bebop, the more I think, wow, that was a cool show, and there was a lot of dead space. Like there's more than one episode where I was like, okay, I don't care about this story. And that show is all style and very little substance. And that's not a bad thing.
How can you argue with that? For saying less than that, man.
How can you argue with that? Do you really think that Cowboy Bebop is all substance? No way.
I'm controversially of the opinion that style and substance are too often separated.
Oh, okay.
And we're talking about anything, whether that's, you know, literature or films or anime or whatever, or music. You know, it's like, it's not official separation a lot of the time. But I think with Bebop, there's an episode of Bebop that can make me cry. And there's very few anime that can do that for me.
Right. Well, again...
Okay, there's a couple of filler episodes in there. I watched some this week, actually, because I watch Bebop all the time. And I actually watched some at the beginning this week. And there's an episode that's like an Alien tribute. And I love Alien. I'm a bit obsessed by Alien. And it's a weak episode. It's one where something in the fridge comes to life. And it's a weak episode. But there's not many of those. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? I think it's... I love that show, man. I really do.
Well, again, I'm really looking forward to going back and watching it again. I don't think I've seen it in 12 years.
Wow. Okay. Right. Okay. See, I watch it. It's one of those ones. I've got them on my media center, and I pull them up and I watch them. You know, when I've got spare 25 minutes, stick a Bebop on.
Yeah, well, that's dedication. I mean, I've seen the movie recently, and I enjoyed that. But again, I'm just thinking back to my memory of that show, and I'm like, well, how much did I really like? I'm just trying to be honest about how much I really liked Cowboy Bebop, and it's going to be very interesting. I'm really looking forward to going back through it. But the one thing, the very first thing that I decided to revisit was something that I was not looking forward to revisiting, but knew I had to, otherwise I'd be doing myself a major disservice, because it's the show that kind of got me into anime. It's Tenchi Muyo.
Oof.
Which is just brutal. It's been a long time, and I just watched a couple episodes of the first OVA series that started the whole craze and got everybody into that show, and it's like cave drawings. It's like the cave drawings version of a harem show. It moves super, super slow. You're supposed to find stuff funny. And the funny thing is the first three episodes of it, all of that information would have been crammed into the first 7 minutes of a harem show now. But it takes fucking forever to get anywhere. And I gotta say, for a show that is ostensibly supposed to be about hapless boy has bevy of hot alien girls around him who are all into him, man, the ladies in Tenchi Muyo are not attractive. They're really not attractive at all. I don't know when the last time you looked at those character designs were. But
they got, teeth things going on. They got little teethy things.
Yeah, they got little incisors.
Well, coming out of the 80s, that was a big thing.
The catgirl thing.
Yeah, well, not only that, but for some reason, they Japanese thought that was cute, fangs on girls. And I think it came out of how all their pop stars in the 80s just had terrible teeth.
We'd love them in Britain, man.
Yeah. Well, the lead girl.
That was one of the few shows that got, the TV here, so maybe that's why.
Wow. Yeah, well, the lead girl, Ryoko, is this weird-looking alien with, a Goku haircut, and she's wearing, this boxy ankle-length dress. It's fucking hideous, and it sort of takes the tension out of the harem a little bit when you're like, hey, Tenchi, which one of these dumpster fires are you going to get with?
These do not represent my views. Not that I find them attractive, but I do not represent my views on women. The A&N cast does not represent Tim Moore's views on women.
Yeah. It's just for harem show character designs, they're just remarkably unattractive. These shows go, and don't get me wrong, I'm not watching these shows thinking ooh, sexy ladies or whatever, I don't care. But it's kind of remarkable that in a show built around this premise, the female character designs are super weird, cartoony, not conventionally attractive character designs. So it's kind of weird just seeing that. The other thing that came to mind was the dub is fucking, it's terrible. It's from the mid-90s, so of course it's not going to be great, but whoever it is they got to voice Tenchi's dad, I wouldn't say it's the winner, but I would put it in contention for the worst dub performance I've ever heard.
Peeping!
Quiet, not so loud!
What are you trying to do? You're not teaching me how to be a peeping Tom, are you?
Tenchi, listen, we're here at the hot springs, and there are young ladies up there in the women's bath. It would be really rude not to peek.
The hostess will kill us if she finds out.
I'm not afraid of her at all.
So, what's the deal with the towel, Dad?
Numbskull, what do you think? This is the traditional attire for peeping.
Dad, stop! You're embarrassing me, you know?
Hurry up, son. We don't want to miss anything.
It is horrible. I don't know if either of you remember that, but...
No.
Holy shit, it's bad. It's like you're watching an amateur production. It's just terrible. Anyway, so Tenchi Muyo will not be on my list.
I guess not.
I'm glad I went back and saw it, but I can see with the properties in it that made me a fan. It certainly wasn't like anything else I had seen. It felt like it was doing things with animation that I hadn't seen before. But man, going back and looking at it again, oof. No, that's a negative on the Tenchi.
It's a personal point of pride for me that I never got into that show.
Yeah.
I watched a few episodes and I'm like, this is okay, but I never went beyond that, and I'm proud of myself. I had taste when I was 14.
Yeah, good for you.
You were 14, Jesus.
15, 16, I don't know.
I never got into it, but I did watch a lot of it because I was probably stoned and couldn't be put to turn over after Cowboy Bebop. Because the thing was, it was on Cartoon Network over here after Cowboy Bebop was kind of like this sort of cult thing over here, and they just, what anime can we buy? And they bought that, and Outlaw Star, and what else? Someone will tell me. Someone, when they hear this, will remind me. A couple of other shows that weren't particularly great. And yeah, they put like Bebop on every night. It's probably why I love Bebop so much, because I used to just watch it over and over again because it was on every night. And like I said, I was stoned. And then Tenchimio would come on after it. She'd be like, ah, okay.
Maybe.
I wonder how many shows are popular because of substances.
All of them.
Isn't that sort of Adult Swim's entire programming sort of philosophy?
Right, but I mean by percentage.
Oh, right, yeah. Maybe I'll blaze up and watch some Tenchi and it'll be totally awesome.
With me, it's most of them. I don't do that anymore very often. But, like, yeah.
Sure, you know. Tim.
I know, I have actually stopped. It's, well, sort of. But it's not like I used to. Not like I used to. I'm an old man, you know.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, that was a big decider for me. I'll be perfectly honest and frank about it, because I've never shied away from talking about it. But it's a big decider for me with anime, is it fun to watch when caned? And, yeah, there's not much more to anime that is, to be honest. It just kind of disturbs me a lot of the time.
All right. Okay, so let's go ahead and get to Twitter. There is a lot of questions to get through here. Okay, and we got some really silly ones, and the first one is a silly one. Mark FBR asks, who would win in a fight, Miyazaki or Stan Lee?
Oh, Miyazaki, man. He's evil.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the hatred boiling within that guy.
For a man who makes these, like, you know, all-time generational classic family films with, you know, of gentleness and such kindness in them, he seems like the meanest man in the world, and I cannot imagine, like... The image of him kneecapping Stan Lee is just too easy. It's too easy to call to mind. It's just, it immediately pops into my head.
Have you seen his interviews on the Arrietty Blu-ray? Have you got the Arrietty Blu-ray?
We don't
yet?
Have
is that
it.
Out?
Yeah,
I don't think it's out.
No, it's not out.
Okay. Wait until you see the interviews. I assume they're on there. I assume you get the same content that we get. There's some interviews. He's an extremely bitter, angry man. Mm-hmm. He's going, you ask a kid now, to an animator now, to draw modern-day Tokyo, and it's all neon because they've seen Blade Runner. Ah, like this. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. It's like, but at the same time, he's doing it, and then he's looking off Kanya to, I guess, Suzuki or someone, and, like, laughing. So he knows, he's self-aware that he's a grumpy old bastard. You know what I mean?
I imagine he's been a grumpy old bastard since he was, like, 40.
Yeah, no, totally, yeah. Well, Marxists are, you know, that's what we're like. We're all ex-Marxists. We're all like that. We're all grumpy old bastards.
Yeah.
It comes from being proven wrong all the time.
Okay. Sumit Kumar asks a question for Tim. Paintwork was a blast to read. When can we expect your next book? Are you planning on anything novel length?
Yes. I am planning on getting around to writing it. I'm in the middle of writing a novel at the moment. I don't know when it'll be out. I've no idea. I'll have to get a publisher and all that sort of stuff for it. Fingers crossed it might be next year. It'll definitely finish this year, and then hopefully it'll be published next year. There's some more short fiction coming out this year, but I can't talk about it at the moment. Yeah, it's quite exciting. I've got some. There'll be more fiction written by me out by the end of the year. I can say that. That's about it.
Yay.
Cool. All right. XB Saint asks, most unfitting license deals. Example, Bodacious Space Pirates being licensed by Sentai. I'm not sure what he means. I don't see how that's unfitting, especially since Sentai doesn't appear to have a strategy, or their strategy is just pick up fucking everything.
Yeah, I mean, nothing's really ill-fitting these days.
No.
Although
other than, like, you know, Viz getting hentai.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in terms of, like, just as a fan, like, ill-fitting to me is Tiger and Bunny being at Viz. Like, I wish it weren't at Viz. I wish it were with a company that's going to do something with it. But other than that, yeah, I mean, it's just business. Like, they're obviously picking up whatever they think is going to make some money. Apparently they think Upot is going to make some money.
So the annoying thing for me is I can't see this looping thing legally, the new looping legally, because Funny have got it and Funny are streaming it, and all their stuff's region blocked to the UK. And it's really irritating because it seems like this season, pretty much every show that I'd be interested in, apart from that, which is the one I'm most interested in, I can watch legally, you know? And I was kind of hoping we were past that now, you know?
Well, Funimation usually doesn't get UK rights, or if they do, they try to resell them, so they're not going to, you know, pollute.
Oh, yeah, no, that's totally, yeah. I mean, they'll sell it onto Manga, and Manga will put it. I mean, in a way, it guarantees to me that it's going to get a release over here, and it would be very unusual for it. I would have been very surprised if it wasn't getting a release, I'm sure. It's just a shame that I can't watch it without stealing it, you know. And I kind of just thought we were at that point now where pretty much anything of any quality I was going to be able to watch easily.
Well, if you're British, you get screwed. That's how it works.
Yeah, but it's got better, man. It has got better. I mean, Crunchy seem to have sorted their shit out. There's very little. I haven't found anything just flicking through Crunchy in the last few weeks that's been blocked here. And it used to be there was a point where, you know, more than half the stuff on Crunchy was blocked. Even, yeah, two, 3 years ago, it's like when they first went properly legit, there was very little you could see. But, yeah, no, that's a shame, man. It's a bit of a shame. Because this sort of show I would scream about to people over here, go, yeah, watch this.
From what I hear, it's not that great. Like, the designs are nice, but aside from that, it's just constant nudity, which is fine to a point.
Yeah, it's a bit disappointing. But I've, you know me, I screamed about, like, Redline for so long, and I've got to scream about anything else he does.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm enjoying Lupin. It's not an amazing show. Story-wise, it's just kind of... it's all right. Okay. Invalid Name asks for Justin, is there a plan for streaming on ANN as more people switch to devices that can't do Flat?
Does he know that we've stopped streaming?
I don't think so.
Yeah, we've stopped streaming. All that stuff you see is either from Hulu or Crunchyroll. Yeah, we have agreements with them to embed their players, but no, we don't stream on our own anymore. We gave up. That was a disaster.
Also from Invalid Name, he asks, has he missed his chance to ever see Nobody's Boy Remy in any legal form?
Probably.
Oh, man. I saw that when I was a kid. Like, my mum got it out of video, like, rental place when I was tiny. It made me cry. It was horrible.
Every episode. It's the best show if you like watching children suffer.
It was what we got here, and it was dubbed, and this was in the early 80s. We got some kind of VHS. Well, it must have been dubbed, man. It was called Nobody's Boy, and it was an anime thing, and it was a VHS. And it must have been some, like, compilation movie thing of the series or whatever. And I just have vivid memories of crying like a... And telling my mum to stop it. Make it stop. I think at one point.
Holy fucking shit. I have got to track this down.
Unless I'm being mental, Justin, but I'm pretty sure I have memories of this. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know that existed.
I'm quite sure the experience is even more gut-wrenching, you know, watching it spread across 52 or whatever episodes. But yeah, it's a great show, and nobody watched it streaming, and nobody bought the DVD, and I don't think you'd have to be, unless, I don't know, TMS has started putting more and more of their stuff on Hulu, so who knows, maybe they'll dust the cobwebs off and give it the old college try again.
What year was it released, you know?
78, I believe.
Yeah, so that would totally... I can't be making this up, right? Because that would totally tie in with when I would have seen it. Because it would have been... we got a VHS player, like, I don't know, early 80s. It was a big deal when we joined, like a Blockbusters type thing. And my mum would just rent out stuff for me. Right. I'd got to rent me out Blade Runner because it had Harrison Ford in it and it was set in space, so it was probably like Star Wars. And that was, a life-changing event for me. But, she would rent out anything that looked like a kid's thing. And she got this, came back with this thing called Nobody's Boy. It was a cartoon. And it was horrible. I was like, make it stop,
Well, there is a compilation movie. I just wasn't aware there was an English. I must look into this.
I doubt it had subtitles, man, at that age, because I would have only been, like, 10. No, not even that. I would have been, like, 8 or something.
Right. I can subject a whole new generation of kids. Anyway.
All right. As Andra asks, talk a little bit about why you like Alien over Aliens, what Tim thinks of that.
Wow. Like, how many hours have we got, man? I don't dislike Aliens. That's a myth that I dislike it. It's just, it's not as good a film as Alien, right? Because Aliens, like, yeah, it's just a fucking fantastic movie. It's beautifully made. It's a beautifully rendered. It's, yeah, I don't want to talk for hours about why I love Alien. I watched Aliens again recently. You know, the Blu-ray set came out, and I've watched all the films on it multiple times since that came out. And not apart from Alien 4, obviously. And I watched Aliens again a few weeks ago. The first time I watched it when I got that Blu-ray set, I was like, oh, I just watched it straight after Alien. And I was like, oh, yeah, it doesn't really hold up to Alien. And then I watched it again, and it was better than the last time I watched it. I should point out, when Alien came out, and I must have been about 13, 14... I guess, when that came out, I loved that movie, and I probably liked it more than Alien. But as you get older, you can see the original Alien is almost like this sort of art house film, and how beautifully shot and lit it is. Whereas Aliens is this big James Cameron action movie. But there's stuff in Aliens that you couldn't do now. I mean, and like the final sequence with the alien queen, and that Stan Winston animatronic stuff. Jesus fucking Christ, that looks amazing now. And if they did that now, they'd use CGI, and it would look ropey as hell. But you're watching something that's real, that's been controlled by puppeteers, is an actual real physical thing, and you can see it is. And that final sequence is beautiful because of that. But yeah, I think it's just the tone of Alien and how convincing it is, and the fact that nothing happens in the first 40 minutes for Alien, and A, you don't really care because it's so absorbing, and B, the fact that nothing happens and you're so convinced by the kind of realism of it, so when the crazy shit does kick off, it's fucking terrifying because of that. It's convinced you know, that you're there with these people, and that it's just the way it was made, and how the sets, the 360 degree sets and everything. I talked recently to a guy who worked on Prometheus, who was in the art department. He's like a set designer, and he was just like bubbling over with enthusiasm, which is a good thing because I'm really worried about that film. But he was bubbling over with enthusiasm about the set design and how like Ridley Scott's using a lot of practical effects again, and 360 sets and stuff. So yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah, we got into this on Twitter a little bit a couple weeks ago, Alien versus Aliens, and I agree with you 100%. Alien is a extremely well-made horror film, and it's shot like an art house movie. It's a gorgeous piece of cinema, and Aliens is a big, big, loud, dumb action movie. And it's a good, big, dumb, loud action movie, but it is...
Yeah.
It does not have the grace, as weird as it is to say, it doesn't have the grace of the first one. The first one's just a better film. It's just, overall, it's better. It's kind of weird to compare the two because they are so different. But
I mean, the performances in Alien are incredible. I mean, it's just got an incredible cast, and especially for that genre of film. And they are talking over each other, and it's got this almost kind of like documentary style with the script and... Yeah, it's just and it works because, you know, Ridley Scott just come off The Duelist, which is an art house movie, right? You know, and come to make this work kind of like script wise. If you read O'Bannon's script, and I love Dan O'Bannon, you know, but if you read his script, it's a B movie script, man.
Yeah,
and he took that and he made, like you say, he just shot it in like an art house style. It's beautifully lit. The attention to detail is ridiculous. He really understands pacing. And to get back to anime, you know, you can see his influence on Oshii really strongly, how Oshii does pacing. When he was, you know, not overdoing pacing, arguably. But, you know, like, you know, and yeah, it's a perfect film.
Yeah, well, and the other thing you can say about it, in terms of the performances, is, like, say what you will about Ridley Scott, he doesn't get bad performances out of his actors. He's generally the acting in his films, whether you like them or not, is not bad. Cameron, I don't know if you could necessarily say the same thing. It's not bad performances, but they're all this kind of very sort of stereotypical action movie performances. I don't know what it is, but you can look at all of his films. There's a similar quality to the acting, and it's just not. not quite what Ridley Scott was able to do. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a better film. Just period. Yeah, Aliens might be more exciting or whatever, but Alien is a much better film.
I need to rewatch those. I don't remember much. It's been years.
Yeah. Yeah, they're good.
Pick those Blu-rays up, man, if you haven't. I don't know about over there, but over here, they're stupid cheap. And it's a beautiful set, and there's an extra disc which has got incredible material, and it's got like a multi-shot, multi-angle split-screen thing of the chestbuster scene and all the takes of it, which isn't gratuitous. It's really interesting to watch the actors and the preparation. And yeah, it's an amazing, amazing set, the Blu-ray anthology.
Yeah, I've had it since it came out. It's great. And also, I am on the record as saying I don't hate Alien Resurrection. I don't think it's a horrible movie. It's not good, but it's not that bad. I think people just compare it to the first two. And of course, it's nowhere near as good, but it's not that bad a film.
See, I hated Alien 3 for a long time, and I'm gradually coming around to it. When the extras on the anthology are really interesting about Alien 3, because it's basically everyone involved in it sitting around, apart from Fincher, who might have nothing to do with it. So everyone else sat around discussing why it's so shit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you look at that assembly cut where they put in all Paul McGann's character stuff, because I read the novelization, the Alan Dean Foster novelization at the time, and I remember why have they cut all this stuff? Just his character's the only interesting thing in this movie. And so why they cut it, I don't know, but they put that back in as well as they can in this assembly cut, and it feels like a better film. Yeah, I'm coming around to that movie.
I'm pretty sure the reason, for the longest time, I was like, man, I wish Fincher would go back and do something with that, but I guess the reason that
he hates it, he won't touch it.
The reason that he won't is because he doesn't think he can fix it. I don't think he thinks the material even exists to make that a decent movie.
His whole take on it, from what I can make from reading those interviews with people and a little bit with him, he won't even talk about it, is he was so stoked about doing that film because he was such a fan of the original. He had kind of almost studied how Ridley Scott had made it, and he wanted to take that kind of perfectionist, like Ridley Scott used to do when he was making movies. And he had it beaten out of him. Fincher had it beaten out of him by the studio. And you know, they were interfering on set all the time. And it was a terrible experience for him. He went to it like a fanboy almost, because he was such a fan of the original.
Weirdly, Fincher is much more of a perfectionist than Ridley Scott is now. Like,
oh, totally. And my theory about this is that Ridley Scott basically ditched that way of making films after Blade Runner, and you can't blame him, because he made what is the best film of his career and is, in my opinion, one of the best films ever made in Blade Runner, and it was a fucking nightmare. He had the same experience as studio interfering. He was fired off the film before it was finished. You know, they cut it in a way he didn't want it cut, and blah, 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 and all the drama, and then when it came out, the critics hated it and it bombed at the box office. And I think he just looked around him at people like Spielberg and stuff and went, oh, why am I wasting my time making movies like this when I can just knock out blockbusters, which is what he, you know, kind of went on to do, really. It's just a shame, but you can understand why. I think he saw that the industry was changing, unfortunately. He was taking that Kubrick approach, and the only person that ever carried on doing that was Kubrick, and he didn't do it very often over, you know, the end of his career, so.
I don't know. I think he still makes good movies. And frankly, like, the four-hour cut of Kingdom of Heaven is up there with Blade Runner and Alien. Not in terms of being as good as those, but I would say it's an easy number three for him. It's a really good movie.
I think that's the thing. I think he's talented, technically talented enough, and he's an art department guy. He's a designer. I think he's technically talented enough he realized he could knock that stuff out and it would be better than average quite easily. But he just didn't have to kill himself doing it, which is what he did on those two movies, you know. And I think that's why he didn't touch science fiction again until now. It was just because, you know, this is how I do science fiction, and the box office doesn't like it. Well, apart from fucking Alien, was a massive fucking box office hit. It was a huge summer event movie, Alien, when it came out. You know, it was. I can remember. I was a kid, and I was way too young to see it. But I can remember it being in all the papers and on the TV and everything over here. It was like a massive fucking thing, like Jaws, you know. And I think he just, after Blade Runner, I said, "Well, no, that's how I do sci-fi. I'm not George Lucas. I'm not, you know, whoever. I don't want to touch it again."
All right. We got to move on. Okay, NeoCloud9 asks, "Do you prefer plot or character-driven stories?" Good question, Justin.
Uh, I kind of resent having to choose.
Yeah. I like good stories.
that's a total false premise, because, you know, you should have both.
Yeah, right.
If you fail at one, the other can compensate to a point, or you can make a complete experience with one or the other if you're really, really lucky and do it really, really well. But most things need both.
I think when it comes to anime, I'm not big on the kind of, here's just a bunch of characters. I can't watch that stuff, you know, the kind of the harem stuff or the moe stuff or whatever it's called. You know,
I don't think anyone listening to this show is expecting us to embrace that stuff.
No, but, you know, I'm not, and I can understand, you know, I've got my head around understanding why people like that stuff, but it just doesn't work for me. So, I mean, if I had to choose, I would pick something that was plot-driven, I guess. But like you say, you know, as a writer, the two are interlinked. I can't really separate the two. You shouldn't really be separating the two, because your plot should be shaping your characters, and your characters should be driving your plot. You know, it's... It's like yin and yang, Justin. It's like yin and yang.
Touche.
There you go.
Yeah, I think people use character-driven story oftentimes as an excuse for something where the story is inert, or the plot just doesn't move or doesn't go anywhere. It's like, oh, it's character-driven. It's like, well, no, we're just kind of sitting around watching these characters do stuff. It's not really a story.
Character-driven implies driving somewhere.
Yeah, right, exactly. It implies the show is being driven at all. All right, Bobby Serp asks, in his last column, Mike Toole posed the question, what are you not buying? What show did you dislike, which you thought you would like? Did most other people like it, and why couldn't you get into it? Anyone got something off the top of their head?
Everyone's telling me I should like Bodacious Space Pirates, and it's terrible. Yeah. Scott Green was telling me that today, and I trust Scott on most things, and he's my go-to guy for like stuff and a lot of things. And he's going, "Oh yeah, no, it's all right." I'm going, "That's fucking terrible, Scott." It was horrible. It was just like this checklist of tropes thrown together. Why are they working in a maid cafe in space? Why? You know. So yeah, that was a bit disappointing.
Nothing live or nothing anime wise lately, but Legend of Korra, the new Nickelodeon Avatar spinoff, has been a huge disappointment for me. And I got a little bit of shit for that when I said that on Twitter, but it feels like it's juggling three or four different fairly deeply worn different plot elements that do not go together well, and it's pulling off none of them particularly well. And I find the main character irritating, frankly. And I bought a season pass on iTunes, and you can't cancel that, and I'm really kind of annoyed.
Jeez. Yeah, honestly, like, I started out really enjoying Space Pirates. I thought it was a pretty well executed. I stopped after the second episode, though, and the more I read about it, the less I think I'm going to wind up actually watching the entire thing. Bamboo straight up forgot about it in the last issue of the stream. She just forgot to do it. So, like, obviously it's not making much of an impact. But in terms of stuff that I should like, that everyone likes, that I'm not really liking all that much, surprisingly, the HBO series Veep,
really?
Not into it. I don't know what it is. That show feels like it should be better than it is, but it's just, nowhere, man.
I'm enjoying it, but it's not the thick of it. Do you know the thick of it?
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. It's starting to air here, actually.
Okay. I heard this whole rumor they were beeping and swearing on it, which can't be true, man.
I don't think I think it's on late night on, like, it's either BBC or FX or something like that.
Watch the thick of it and then compare it to Veep, and yeah, it's... I like it. I've enjoyed it. I'm a huge... Amanda Iannucci, who's the showrunner and director and co-writer and stuff, he's like a bit of a hero of mine. He's kind of like a... He's kind of like a legendary figure over here. Everything he's done... He hasn't done anything in his career that's been terrible, really. Everything he's... It's very British humour, but he's done some incredibly sort of edgy and very clever and very subtle at times, and very unsubtle other times, shows over here for like 20 years. And he's got a very passionate following, of which I'd include myself part of. And the thick of it is kind of like a an obsession over here. And I think the main, and it's the same format, right? But it's not about, you know, the Veep or the deputy prime ministers that would be over here. It's about just a lowly minister over here in a quite shit department who is basically running up against the sort of spin doctors. And it's very edgy and it's very caustic, and the language is incredible. They employ a guy who's a language expert, who's an expert on cursing, to write the swearing for them. It's incredibly imaginative swearing in it. But the whole thing is just kind of dirtier and, if that's the word, grittier. I hate using gritty. It's a really lazy term. But it's kind of edgier and grittier than Veep is. And I think that's kind of reflected because it's a British show versus a US show. And I think it kind of possibly accurately reflects British politics versus US politics, because I think US politics are just bigger and more polished than we are. And over here, things are kind of done in a panic and not really thought about, and everything's as corrupt as hell. But it's not even corrupt, it's just people are opportunistic, and it kind of reflects that.
So that doesn't happen here at all.
I know it does, but it's kind of slightly over here. What you have to understand about this country is it's shit, and we're just really badly organized at everything. And, you know, you've seen Brazil, right? It's a little bit like that, you know? Mm-hmm. But and everything's kind of – there's no conspiracy. I don't believe in conspiracy theories over here because no one's that well organized. Do you know what I mean? People are opportunistic and they jump on things to try and do stuff, and that's about as bad as it gets. But that can be pretty fucking bad. And he kind of reflects that in the show really well here. And we don't have lobbyists over here. We do, obviously, but they're not official and it's all hidden. And it's kind of like it more panicky and edgy, and people are sweating more over here is what it feels like than compared to in Veep. And I think that kind of is possible reflection. But I think what I'm trying to say is I think that maybe takes the edge off how it works slightly, the format. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I don't know if that makes any sense. People need to go and watch The Thick of It and watch Veep and compare and contrast. And there's subtle differences because it is basically the same show. And he's quite cleverly reusing plot elements and reshaping them to fit the characters, which I've quite admired. He's almost doing that almost as a bit of fan service to people like me that are sort of Thick of It fanatics, because you can see it and go, oh, I see what you're doing there, and it's kind of nice. But I'm enjoying it. I've got this, like, three episodes now. I've watched three episodes, and I've enjoyed them. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus is great, I think, but it's not quite the Thick of It at the same time, but it can't be.
Yeah, well, my whole point was I feel like I should love that show, and I don't. Conversely, I feel like I shouldn't love the show Girls, but I do.
Oh, that looks terrible. I haven't seen that.
It's
terrible.
Really good. People are giving it a lot of shit, but that is a good show. All right, moving on. Justin, are you watching either of those?
No.
Yeah. You should check out Girls, I think.
Okay.
You might dig it.
Zach, right. Big Mad Men fan. What do you think of this season?
Oh, it's great so far.
I'm digging it.
It's so
hardcore.
Good. It's so
I thought
good.
It was slacking a bit, but it's picked right up, I think, again.
How is the show in its fifth season better than it's been in the last, like, three or two?
Honestly, the first two seasons are a little weak, the first one especially.
Yeah, 3 and 5, I think we can easily point to as the strongest seasons of that show. So
yeah, and 4 was no slouch, but...
Four wasn't bad, but this one is... Every episode is a home run. Like,
yeah,
it's real good shit. Okay, we are not talking about anime a lot this time. It's okay, though. I have a 22 for furthering the not talking about anime theme. What potentially awful movies will you be forcing yourself to see this summer? He says, personally, I think Amazing Spider-Man will be the worst.
This is your domain, man.
Yeah, this is my domain. Looking over the list of summer movies, I think I can confidently say that if Spider-Man is not the worst, and apparently the studio hates that movie, like Sony hates it.
Really?
They already hired new people to write another one. They're like, okay, we're going to put this out and then move quickly on to the next one.
Why are they doing it in the first place? I don't understand.
Because if they don't make a Spider-Man movie every couple of years, the rights go back to Marvel, and then Disney gets to make that money. So they were hanging on.
Jesus Christ.
To be honest,
Marvel probably do a better job these days, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I think so. I kind of want those rights to go back, if only so Spider-Man can just be shuffled into the next Avengers movie.
I'm not a big Marvel guy, and I'm not really excited about any of it, and I'm not going to go and see Avengers even. I hate Joss Whedon. It's one of my defining things.
It is a good
movie. So I'm done. I'm done. I used to read X-Men as a kid, so I quite like the X-Men films, some of them. But I'm done with superheroes. I'll go and see the Batman thing because it's Christopher Nolan. But that's the only reason why. You know.
Well, I'm not a Joss Whedon guy either, but The Avengers was a great movie. But yeah, no. If it's not Spider-Man, then oh boy, Men in Black 3 is probably going to be a fucking train wreck. They were not done with the script like 2 months into filming.
Oh, that's not a good sign.
They didn't have an ending until I think they shot it. So
that sounds terrifyingly like Alien 3.
Yeah, that movie is probably going to be a fucking mess. That is exactly the example of, oh shit, we don't have any tent poles for the summer. What do we do? Let's make another Men in Black. Like, first of all, I don't think anyone wanted another Men in Black movie. I certainly didn't. But the fact that they were so far in the weeds on the script, that thing's going to be a mess. And frankly, like, the sequel, the second one, was shot the same way. They didn't have a script on the second one either, and it totally shows. That movie's terrible. But yeah, those two are probably going to be pretty bad. And then he asks, what movie are you looking forward to most? That's easy, Prometheus. Duh.
But I'm also I'm genuinely very worried about Prometheus.
Really?
Just because, well, Phantom Menace, man. You know, and it'd be a bigger blow to me than the Phantom Menace was. It really would, because, you know.
Your expectations aren't.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've got the day off work to go and see it with a guy I went to school with who I only see about two or three times a year now. He's a very good friend from school, but I don't see him very often. But we have taken the days off work, so he's going to come to Bristol from Oxford, and we're going to go see the movie at least twice, I imagine. You know, because we were such hardcore Alien/Blade Runner fans in the 80s, you know, that we need to go and do this. And I think we're both secretly quite nervous about it. Because if it's terrible, it'll be a real letdown. Yeah. And I don't know. I really want it to be good. I really do want it to be good. And I don't think it'll be dreadful. I don't want it to, you know, contaminate how wonderful Alien is somehow.
Well, at least it's rated R. So we have that.
Yes.
At least it's not a PG-13.
Yes, exactly.
This guy says he's most looking forward to Brave, which I have to admit I'm pretty lukewarm on, but that's every Pixar movie. The trailers are just not exciting, and then you see it, and the movie's great. So
I'm exactly the same. I don't usually see them at cinema. I can't be motivated to go and see them, and then someone forces me to watch them. I'm like, oh, that's fucking great.
Yeah,
I'm the same with every Pixar film ever.
I religiously go to see every non-Cars Pixar movie.
Of course I'll see it on opening day, but the trailers are just... in front of some movie I saw... There was a trailer that was 2.5 minutes. It was just one sequence of that movie. It wasn't a traditional trailer. But the sequence that they showed this princess character. There's an archery tournament, and she wants to go into the archery tournament, and her disapproving parents are like, no, you can't. And then she goes into the archery tournament, and she's wearing, like, this princess dress, and she's like, oh, this dress is totally holding me back from being able to fire the bow. And she, like, rips the dress in order to fire the bow. And I was like, you know... This is not that interesting. It wasn't very inspired. It felt a little leaden. Whatever. It's a trailer. Pixar trailers are terrible. So we'll see. I'll see it on opening day. I'm sure it'll be good. That one's had kind of a tortured production history, though, so we will see. Okay. Sewing Rose 11 asks, how exactly was Right Stuff the ones to get Hitalia? Talking about their new print-on-demand manga service. Justin, you have any insight on that?
No, just to guess that they happened to be friends with the right people at the right time and were able to just do something that made sense.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, they found a partner and they figure they can make that work. I mean, if they're going to launch with something, they may as well launch with something that's basically guaranteed to sell.
Right.
So, yeah, there you go. And then she also asked, print-on-demand manga, future of the industry, good for out-of-print titles, are people too cheap to put up with the higher prices?
Jury's still out.
Yeah, jury's. This is new, so we will. We will find out, I guess.
Surely digital is. I don't know. I don't know really. I guess it's because because it's manga. People are having physical copies, don't they? If I had an iPad, I'd be doing it all that way. I don't have one. So.
I mean, to be honest, like having bought an iPad, I will never read comics any other way ever.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean.
Me neither.
They look so fucking good on the Retina display. It looks way better than it ever could on paper.
Yeah, I've been buying stuff left and right. I've bought more manga in the last month than I have in the last 2 years.
Yeah, because it looks so damn good.
I mean, I've seen it, and I've got the new iPhone, and it looks good on that. Do you know what I mean? Even though it's tiny. Mm-hmm. If I had an iPad, I'd definitely be there. I mean, I bought a Kindle a year or two ago, and yeah, that's it for me. Bang.
People love making a big show of, oh, I need paper, I'm a traditionalist. You know what? If you had an iPad, you would convert.
That's an Otaku thing, though, isn't it, man? It's an Otaku thing.
Probably.
Like, look at my shelves, you know. I mean, guys, you do a column on it, you know. You know what I mean?
At some point, practicality has to win out. I mean, manga is the most unwieldy art form to collect there is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But people love that. They love the unwieldiness of it. Oh, look at me. My whole life's been taken over by manga. Look at me, how much a fan I am.
Well, that's fine. That, you know, I don't have a
checklisting almost.
I really don't have a problem with that. It's like, it's fine. Okay, so you're a big...
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, no.
But, I mean, frankly, like, the minute I have shown comics, either American comics or manga, on an iPad to a collector, they're like, oh, shit. Like, I want to read comics this way now. It's a quality thing. Of course you want it when it looks really pretty. That's real hard to argue with. Okay. Land of Obscusion asks, are there any plans for a buried treasure or buried garbage for 2012? Justin?
Maybe. I haven't thought about it in a while. Maybe I should.
You were talking about... There was something,
oh, right.
There was
yeah, something I did just think about it, and then I stopped thinking about it because I was writing other things. I don't know. Maybe.
I wouldn't say no. And he also asked, with the 90s special coming up, what are your top three worst 90s anime? Well, no one can come up with that off the top of their head.
No.
But I know the worst anime, that the thing I listed as the worst anime I think I've seen, Cyber Team and Akihabara, that was 98, so, you know. Garzy's Wing is 96 or 97.
Yeah, there's so much garbage from the 90s. I mean, yeah. Panzer Dragoon.
Going through that list, just looking at everything that came out in the 90s, it is a decade of extreme highs and extreme lows and not a lot in the middle.
Yeah.
There's really, really great stuff and fucking garbage, and that's kind of it.
Did you say Panzer Dragoon? I really wanted to like that. It is pretty bad, though.
You could not watch more than a few frames of that and still want to like it.
Yeah, it's a shame, because there's Mobius designs in there, man. Yeah.
The game, but not the anime. The anime is a train wreck. No effort was put into that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah.
Sorry. All glazy-eyed there. Like Panzer Dragoon on the Saturn and Mobius and these things. Yeah.
All right. Empty Path asks, we talked about this a little bit, either of you watching Legend of Korra? I am not. But the super fans of that show got awful quiet after the premiere. So I don't know if everybody's feeling the same way you are, Justin, but...
Some people are really digging it, and I got told that in no uncertain terms when I posted on Twitter, but I'm not impressed.
Yeah.
It's got quite a big following outside for the anime community, like I see through, you know, tour and places. And yeah, people seem to be... I haven't heard anyone really slating it. I didn't watch Avatar, though, so it just sort of slipped me by, so I haven't paid it any attention to.
Yeah, I didn't watch Avatar, so I know I should, but I didn't, and that means I will not watch Legend of Korra. Weirdly, I didn't watch the Avatar cartoon, but I did watch the movie.
I haven't seen that, man. Jesus.
I quite like the original cartoon. It was an Americanization and a slight improvement on the tired Shonen Jump formula that actually worked for me.
Cowboy Dev asks, how are you liking the summer movie season thus far? Well, we're only one weekend in, so it's kind of hard to tell, but I really did enjoy The Avengers. That was a very good movie, and apparently the rest of the country agrees, because it's looking at $111 million second weekend.
Wow.
Pretty nuts. All right, Chintaku asks, Tim, what do you prefer, Ghost in the Shell movies or Standalone Complex?
Oh, the movies. I like Standalone Complex, but, yeah, the movies. Oh, that's tough. Would I take Innocence over SAG? I don't know. I like Innocence a lot, man, even though it's dreadful. But it looks beautiful, you know? It's just it looks fantastic.
It has some great moments, doesn't it? It doesn't add up to anything.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's got some beautiful sequences, and and it's beautifully made, you know. But the original, and I mean the original, not 2.0, which is like, what have they done to that? It looks dreadful in places. But I mean, the remaster's nice, but Yeah, I really need to shell out for that Japanese Blu-ray of the original at some point. Yeah, I love that movie, man. And it's beautiful. I mean, because I come, you know, we mentioned cyberpunk at the top of the show and stuff. And to me, that's like the definitive cyberpunk movie, really. Like, even more than Blade Runner. I don't really see Blade Runner as being a cyberpunk movie. And it's Ghost in the Shell is the one. It's the closest there has been to a kind of a serious William Gibson-esque cyberpunk movie. Yes, I love that film.
Okay. The Omadon asks, do you have any favorite anime composers or soundtracks for variety's sake other than those involving Yoko Kanno? So that
Kenji Kawai, then.
Oh, yeah. Duh.
Yeah. Yeah. The Pat Labor 2 soundtrack, man. It's my favorite anime soundtrack.
Yeah, that's a good one. Dustin, anything come to mind?
Not off the top of my head other than Kenji Kawai. I mean, Shiro Sagasta is pretty good, but... You know, he's another one that is just, you name a few shows and they're like, oh, yeah, Evangelion, oh, yeah, Karakano, duh, yeah, he's great.
Yeah. The Evangelion soundtrack is amazing, actually, yeah.
It really is.
I have a lot of issues with that show, with some of the characters, but it's one of the few shows that still make the hair on my back and my neck stand up. And it's those builds, it's the musical, the score build into the battle sequences, it's great, man, yeah.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, because, of course, he said, other than those involving Yoko Kanno, and lately the first thing that comes to mind is Wolf's Rain.
Right. Yeah, yeah. God, that I think that might be the best anime soundtrack of all time.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, Ed Sizemore, your friend of mine, asks, who has more contempt for anime fans, Tim or Daryl Surratt?
Well, me and Dal were, you know, brothers from different mothers, I think, really, with these sort of things, you know. Yeah, I'm going to give Dal that one.
Yeah, but just. Neither of you actually has to deal with them 8 to 10 hours a day like I do.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, lots of silly questions in here. Jaron Imanich asks, when the anime apocalypse comes, to whose house do you take refuge in, Justin's or Tim's?
The weather's probably better at Justin's.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is doubtlessly true.
Yeah.
See, when I see this question, it's who would you rather be trapped in a place with? And Justin and I will probably murder each other after like a day or two.
Yeah. We're buddies, but, oh, yeah, we would get on each other's nerves pretty quick.
I don't think Zach, you could handle British food, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's not enough corn syrup in it for you, man.
And whatever happens, happens, if that's the choice I got to make. All right, AIC and Anime, your friend of mine, Scott Green. More accurate depiction of the UK, licensed by royalty or Sherlock Hound?
What's licensed by royalty? What's that? I don't know.
Licensed by royalty is this probably best left forgotten attempt at sort of recapturing the Cowboy Bebop audience from the early 2000s. It was kind of a spy show, I think. I don't really remember what it's about, but it's set in the UK. And it's,
oh, really?
It's known mostly for having a theme song by the guy who is widely recognized as the Fifth Beatle. it's got a good theme song, but...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's... I don't remember much about it other than it wasn't really worth remembering. But if you want to see something, you know, Japanese people attempting to recreate the UK, you should probably check it out. And I have never seen Sherlock Hound.
Oh, Sherlock Hound's all right, man. Well, the Miyazaki done ones are... Because the show got put on hold, I think, after like 7 or 8 episodes because of legal things.
Right.
And he got bored and went and made, I don't know, Castle Cadillac or something. And, you know, because, you know, he was Miyazaki, wasn't going to sit around and wait for that to happen. But the episodes he did are pretty good. They're pretty smart. And, yeah, I kind of like that show. It's okay.
Wait, Tim, who is Miyazaki?
Oh, okay. Okay, we're going now, are we? Studio Ghibli. He's the head of Studio Ghibli. That's who he is. Because the Italian pronunciation of an Italian word.
Ted Warner asks, Tim, what do you think of dubstep?
What do I think of dubstep? Oh, my days. who said this? Who asked this? It's not Bamboo, is it?
No.
Okay, me and Bamboo have got a long-running dubstep thing going on. I like dubstep, but the thing is, people don't know what dubstep is. I think it's the main problem, especially in America. Americans don't know what dubstep is. The same way they don't know what techno is. And, you know, Skrillex isn't dubstep. All due respect to him, he's got a lot of fans, whatever. We have a term for what you think is dubstep. Over here in the UK, we call it brostep. Because it's that kind of, it's very aggressive and it's very over the top and, you know, it's... And that's not really dubstep. I come from Bristol and Bristol is one of the places where dubstep was invented and it's a deeper sound than that. It's more melodic. It is very aggressive as well, but it's a sparser kind of... It's quite a depressing sound. It's quite a down sound. It's not a big... Let's take lots of drugs and jump up and down sound. It's more let's smoke loads of weed and be depressed sound. Do you know what I mean?
So if you were to recommend actual dubstep to someone, who would you recommend? Bass Nectar?
Bass Nectar? Who's Bass Nectar? I don't know Bass Nectar.
Okay.
Burial.
Oh, definitely. I love Burial.
Okay, well, which is kind of like this kind of soundtracky kind of thing, right?
Very visual music.
Yeah, there's a guy in Bristol called Fella, but spelled P-H-A-E-L-A, who is excellent. Anything on Hyperdub, a label called Hyperdub that Burial was signed to for a while. They've done some compilations. Go and get them. They're incredible. It really, dubstep should sound as much like reggae as it does like electronic music, right? Real dubstep. That's the way to define it, really. It should have that kind of spacey reggae sound to it, that Jamaican influence, which you get in Bristol and London because we've got these huge Jamaican communities. But that kind of seems to have been lost in the transatlantic thing, and it seems to be just about, you know, the really sort of caustic electronic sound, which, you know, obviously I love that sort of thing, but it's not like... To British people, that's not like... Few dubstep, really, I don't think.
AngelX03 asked, what do you think Shoji Kawamori was smoking when he came up with AKB-0048's premise of freedom, fighter, idols, and an Orwellian world?
The rolled up ball of money that he got.
Words out of my mouth.
Right. I have not seen that show. I don't think it's streaming anywhere, but obviously that is a cash money proposition.
I imagine it's not streaming anywhere because it's ridiculously expensive.
And who would really watch it?
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Invalid Name asks, any surprise or concern that Funnyco hasn't amounted to much of anything after almost a year?
It depends on what you mean by concern. I mean, Funimation's clearly licensing things, and they're licensing good things, so it's we're not any worse off than we started. But at this point, yeah, it does kind of look like a bit of a bust, doesn't it?
Well, the scuttlebutt that you and I have heard anyway is that it was announced too early. That deal was announced too early. They weren't really ready to go yet when they announced it, right?
Yeah.
And I think they're still hacking stuff out. We don't know. I can, however, say that either next week or the week after, we will have Adam Sheehan and Lance Heiskell on again, doing another Funimation show. We do them about every 6 months. And we will probably grill them about what's up with Funnyco, and they will probably not really give us super solid answers, but we will attempt to figure out what is up with Funnyco. But I don't think it's a reason for concern. Neither company seems to be ailing, so. Okay. Daniel J. Berg asks, besides Studio Ghibli films, what are some quality kid-friendly anime series or movies that I can show my preschool-aged children? Oh, good question.
I am so the wrong person to ask.
What was that, Tim?
Cheese Sweet Home, man. Oh, yeah. I love that show. Yeah, my wife's rewatching it at the moment. Yeah, it's great. It's perfect.
Okay, good answer.
It's not dubbed, though, I don't think. I don't think it's got... It's streaming on Crunchy. I don't know if there's I don't think it's been picked up for, like, a DVD release, so no. I don't know if it's dubbed, so... No. That's a problem, isn't it, with kids, is the subtitles thing, if they can handle subtitles.
But if you want your kids to be artists, there's plenty of good things to show them.
Oh, yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, nothing comes to mind immediately if you have kids. I mean... Preschool. I know nothing about how to entertain preschoolers, so unfortunately.
I say Angel's Egg.
End of Evangelion. Show them that. Okay. Kid Tick asks for Tim, what do you think about the resurgence of sci-fi anime in recent years? I personally loved Marduk Scramble.
I wasn't totally taking Marduk Scramble.
Yeah, it's okay. It's trying a little hard.
Yeah, it was exactly trying a little hard. I think there's a I mean, it's a problem, and I don't think it's restricted to anime, really, with sci-fi at the moment, is that it's very tropey. It's all tropey tropes. And it's an overused word, but it's really an issue in, I think, in sci-fi in general, not just in anime. And it feels in anime a little bit like, oh, you know, shit, what do we do? Oh, sci-fi, bring that back. But they're just bringing it back in tropes. I don't think there's been a kind of... They're just bringing sci-fi elements back to what are kind of just really contemporary anime shows. I don't think there's been a... I can't think of a really sort of science fictional series in the last, like, few years.
Space Pirates is trying. It's trying. I don't know.
Is it?
Succeeding. Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would say so.
And how is it trying, Zach? What's it done?
It seems like it's trying to be straight science, but I don't think...
With little miniskirts and maid outfits.
That is completely peripheral. That show is not about that stuff. I've only seen two episodes, and I can tell you it's not about that stuff.
I watched the first episode today.
Okay.
And I just... Oh, look, there's a girl. She's giving, like, evil looks, and she's got, like, really harsh bangs and glasses. And I was just like, oh, man, these characters. What's this got to do with anything? It's just trope. It's just checklist anime making. It's just database animal shit, you know?
I don't know. Maybe I was desperate for quality or something. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, there might be something I've missed. There might be something lurking around that's, you know, proper sort of science fiction kind of with something to say. Because to me, science fiction needs to have something to say. It needs to have a point to make about either human nature or the world or politics or something. It doesn't have to be anything heavy. It just needs to be. We were having a discussion before I came on with some people about Planetes, you know, and that's the perfect example to me of good science fiction anime. It's probably my favorite show of all time, I think. And, you know, how it's funny and it covers loads of like really important issues and does it in a really good way. And I'd like to see a show like that again. I've not seen a show like that since Planetes, possibly, do you know what I mean?
It was such a rousing hit, that one.
Did it not do well?
No.
Oh, God, no.
That's a fucking shame.
Having recently gone through a mountain of science fiction anime for the 80s shows, it is clear to me that science fiction as a genre in anime has had its heyday.
And oh, yeah, totally. I wouldn't debate that for a second.
Okay, Daryl Surratt wants us to talk about The Raid, which I have not seen. Justin, did you see that?
Nope.
I heard it was really
great. I saw it today.
Oh, you saw it today, okay.
Yeah, it's not actually out here until next week, but I got to press screening today. Yeah, it's excellent. It's very good. If you like extremely violent sort of gunplay and martial arts movies, if you like things like On Back or like John Woo movies and stuff, it's excellent. And it's not heavy on characterization, but at the same time, it's quite clever and it's quite thought provoking. But it's more that it gives you enough characterization that you worry about the characters and the situations they're in, which makes the sort of extreme violence that much more engaging. If I have an issue with like Hollywood action movies, at I just sit there and they wash over me. But this was, you could feel stuff because you felt the danger of the characters, the sense of danger that the characters were in, which is kind of important in those movies, and I think is lost a lot, especially in kind of big CGI superhero style movies. You know who's going to die and you know who's not, and in this you didn't necessarily know who out of, if people don't know the setup, it's about a squad of a SWAT team that goes into this apartment building that's run by this drug gang lord. And they all get sort of picked off as they're going in. And you honestly don't know who's going to make it and who isn't, kind of thing. Yeah, it's a good movie. It's really worth seeing. It was excellent.
I will rent it. Okay. Zeruda asks, Tim, are you going to be involved in any Mobius tribute events?
Amazingly, it sounds like I put Dan up to this, but I haven't. On Sunday, I'm at Bristol Comic Con on a panel talking about Mobius. If people don't know, I'm a bit of a huge Mobius fan. Probably a lot of people listening to the show don't know who Mobius was, but he was a French comic book artist who died a couple of months ago, end of February, I think it was. And he was very influential on science fiction art and filmmaking in particular. He worked on Alien. His designs influenced Ridley Scott for Blade Runner. His designs influenced George Lucas for Star Wars. He worked on The Fifth Element. He did concept art for Tron. He worked on all the great sort of science fiction movies sort of in the 80s and early 90s. And yeah, I'm doing a panel at Bristol Comic Expo on Sunday. So if you're in Bristol, come down and see me withdrawing on like this about Mobius.
Okay. He also asks, who do you feel depicts the UK more accurately in entertainment, the US or Japan?
I don't think the UK depicts the UK particularly well in entertainment, man, to be honest. We're too busy making stuff to sell to the US and maybe Japan that makes us look in a certain way. So I couldn't... It's a big issue. We're not very good... I mean, there's some good TV, but we're not very good at, particularly in movies, of making stuff that really... You either get, like, this kind of Downton Abbey, The King's Speech kind of period drama thing, which is obviously really easy to sell to foreign markets. Or at the other end, you get these, like hooligan movies, you know, like these sort of, like, about football hooligans and stuff, and, you know, Guy Ritchie things and stuff. Like, oh, I'm going to fucking do you in and all this. And and that stuff's just as terrible. I think the best thing I saw recently was, and you know, and it was a sci-fi thing, was Attack the Block, which I think was a really important movie over
here. Love that
here.
Movie.
You liked it or you didn't like it?
I loved it.
It's a fantastic film. And the thing about it was, it was not only a really well-made, nice little budget flick, but it was very important politically and culturally over here, because those kids over here are demonized every day in newspapers and the television, kids wearing hoodies, black kids specifically, but without saying it. You know, we had riots over here last year where these kids kicked off. And these are kids that live in very poor, very run-down environments, just down the road from me, literally a few minutes walk from where I live. And it's a real issue that they're demonised. And they're children, man. They're fucking children. You demonise children. Just makes the situation worse. And Joe Cornish, he came up with that movie, and he really kind of went, look, I'm going to make a fantasy action movie, but I'm going to make the heroes these kids that are demonised every day by the media. And it was really important, I think. And it got slammed by some critics. Most critics over here really liked it, but some critics actually slammed it for that, saying, how can you make these people... I saw the guy that writes the British film column for Ain't It Cool News, man, say this film doesn't work because the main characters are the scum of the earth, is what he actually said. And that makes me so incredibly angry. But that's the attitude from the right-wing press over here, is that these kids are scum and they should somehow be, I don't know, locked up or done away with. And so that film was really, like, a really important film, I think. Just because of that, it kind of hit a really good time over here. It's a great film.
Okay. Rhetorical Noise asks, you're a passionate fan and author of science fiction. Some of the articles for Tor focused on highlighting anime that might appeal to science fiction fans. Could you do the reverse, recommend some science fiction novels that might appeal to fans of science fiction anime?
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay, two off the top of my head, two. And one, the first one's going to be Neuromancer by William Gibson, which is like a really favourite book of mine and a really influential book on me and my writing. And it may seem a little dated now because it was written in the early 80s and it's about the internet, but before it was called the internet and before anyone really knew about the internet. And it's the book that he coined the term cyberspace, you know, which is a term people still use today. He invented that term in that book. It's like I mentioned it earlier, it's a huge influence on Oshi and Shiro, and you can see it in a lot of anime directly, cybernetics and virtual reality and cyborgs and stuff, and a big influence on Ghost in the Shell. So that's one book that people might want to check out, but it's got a bit of a sort of John Carter syndrome to it, possibly now. It was a massive influence on the Matrix movies, and possibly reading it now, it might be like, oh, I know these are popular tropes, but at the time they weren't. They were, you know, truly sort of groundbreaking. And the other book, I think, which is my other favourite book, is the Forever War by Joe Haldeman, which is an incredible book, which has got mecha in it, it's got powered armor in it. It's a big influence on like Photons and those sort of realistic sort of mecha shows. But it's about, Joe Haldeman was a physicist, I believe, but he did a tour of duty in Vietnam, and it's about him coming back to America after serving in Vietnam. And the setup of the book is these guys go away, they travel at speed of light, go fight a war, and then they come back, and because of relativity, they don't age, but in the period they've been away, everything's moved on like 25, 30 years. So it's a big influence on Gunbuster as well. It's got mecha in it as well, like I said. So it's, yeah, Photons and Gunbuster, big influence on. But so he went to Vietnam and came back, and America had changed. You know, there'd been this kind of like social revolution, and people weren't, and like previous wars, people were angry with him for going to war, not happy with him. He wasn't accepted as a hero when he came back from Vietnam. So he came up with this amazing, in order to talk about that, he came up with this amazing science fictional idea of people traveling this huge distance and coming back, and time have moving on by like a generation. So he comes back to an Earth. And it's happened several times because he does a tour of duty several times. Every time he goes away and comes back, the Earth has changed, like, and human society has changed. It's really, really clever, really interesting book. And it really, like I say, really a big influence on Photons, on Gunbuster, on that Shinkai film. Was it Voices of a Distant Star? You can, if you're familiar with those, when you read the book, you'll see where the guys that wrote those series have kind of taken from it. Yeah, it's an excellent book.
Okay. All right. Itoju asks, do you guys feel that being big cinema buffs has a strong influence on your taste in anime? How does it affect how you watch?
Oh, without a doubt.
Yes, it does, and yes, it affects how I watch things.
Yeah. There are both movies and anime that I can't watch simply because I know film too well, and I know when the rules are not being followed, and I know it's like when a musician listens to music, or someone who studied music theory seriously. You know when someone is not being genuine a lot easier.
Yeah, and the flaws stand out much stronger than they would otherwise, I think.
Right. You know exactly what they're doing. Chances are you know exactly what they're doing a lot better, and you will call them out on it almost instinctively.
Yeah. I mean, I like watching stuff that way. It also means I tend to look a lot harder at things like subtext and theme and, excuse me, character and stuff like that. Yeah, it absolutely. I can't shut that part of me off, and I don't want to. But yeah, no, I watch anime with just as critical an eye as I would watch a film or anything else.
I get much more joy out of critical thinking than just simply consuming stuff, you know?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. It's the same with being a writer. I think I get, when I'm watching anime or anything, you're criticizing the writing and thinking, well, why have you done that? Or if it's good, you know, you appreciate it.
Yeah, the flip side of that is, although you are, you know, engaging in critical thinking, you appreciate the good stuff more, too, I think, when something's really working.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, yeah. Boy, does it completely ruin some things.
Yeah.
Like, I to this day, I cannot get through more than 5 minutes of Boondock Saints.
Oh, God.
Yeah, people love that movie.
And it's fucking horrible. And I took so much shit in college because all I could do is sit there and go, wow, this is really badly made. Like, this is very poorly made. I don't know how you can sit through it. And they just fucking loved that movie. And it is trash. It is amateur hour trash.
Just the editing. I feel like a dog being pet the wrong way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a nice metaphor. Let's see here. Wayno 1 asks, if Ancast was a movie, who would play you guys and who would direct it? Fucking weird movie.
Amazing. I'll leave that one to you guys.
That'd be really hard. There's not many half-Asian actors.
Yeah, really. Well, okay, so let's just get weird and say it would be directed by, I don't know, the guy that directed Drive. Nicholas Winding Refn or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
I would be played by Michael Fassbender's penis, and Justin would be played by I don't know, Kirsten Dunst. Let's say that. Okay.
Don't even know where to go with that.
It's such a weird fucking question. All right. Finally, final question. Silver Husky asks, what would the panel consider to be an ideal period of time to reboot or redo a popular anime series, if ever?
Oh, I'd like to see a reboot. I've been saying, talk about this for years. I'd like to see a 26-part remake of Akira of the original manga made into a high budget, it's never going to happen, high budget 26 part series with Otomo in some sort of like overseeing, if not directing role on it. I'd like to see that happen. Because I love the film and I love the manga, but they're different. And I think there's something in between, like Standalone Complex, right? Was, you know, it was kind of in between the movie and the manga. Let's do that with Akira.
I can't picture anything Akira being made today, simply because there would just be too much CG, and it just wouldn't.
Yeah, that's the thing that is.
You know, the thing about the look of Akira, it needs that hand drawn feel. It needs.
Yeah, it needs. Yeah, Tomo's almost like architectural sketches and stuff. Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, but to answer the question, I think like at least 10 or 15 years, then you can really seriously think about it.
I don't think it happens often enough. I think some of this stuff sits there for too long. We're 10 or 15 years out now. We're getting into the point where we're 20 years out from 92. And they really don't remake stuff. They really don't. And I feel like they're leaving money on the table. I would like to see some of this stuff get remade.
Like what?
See a new take on it. You know, I'm totally down with getting a new version of Dirty Pair or whatever. You know, let's see someone else's take on this stuff.
They already did that once.
Yeah, okay, but whatever.
It was unwatchable.
Yeah. I would like to see some new takes on old material. I don't feel like, weirdly, it's a weird thing to say because everybody loves to hate remakes and reboots. But I want to see new takes on stuff that I already like. I'm cool with that.
Well, obviously, you need to be very selective about it as well. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that just conceptually does not stand the test of time. Dirty Pair among them.
Yeah, sure. I don't know why I said Dirty Pair. I'm not even a
fan. But not only that, I think also it's a great idea to remake stuff that didn't get fully fleshed out in anime form before or at all.
Yeah.
For example, Toward the Terror was a great choice because that only got a movie that just barely touched on the manga. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if someone did Please Save My Earth Today or Cosmos Police Justy, that would be awesome as a TV show made today.
Right. Yeah. Stuff like that. I feel like they don't go back to the well really hardly ever. So I'm cool with that. I've doubtlessly, you know, when they do eventually do that, I will complain that there's too many remakes. But right now it feels like they're just not doing it at all, and I would like to see that. I want to see new takes on stuff. So I guess that about wraps it up. Well, that was it's always fun having you on, Tim. Thanks a lot for coming by.
Oh, it's a pleasure, man. Anytime.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Tim for stopping on by. Theme song's Bucharest by the band The New Division. You can check them out at thenewdivision.net. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a rating, a review, we'd appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week, where I'll record the entire podcast in the voice of Tim.